You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Michigan's Unemployment Insurance Agency, the UIA, has wrongly accused tens of thousands of people of cheating on their unemployment claims. And then it began garnishing wages and tax returns, often without the wrongly accused person even knowing what he or she supposedly did. The UIA's director has apologized for the error, but that mistake, pinned on a computer system, has had thunderous repercussions in homes all over Michigan. Take David Vela. For the 11 months he was out of work, he got unemployment. When he went back to work, he stopped claiming benefits. 4 years later, he discovered the UIA had decided he cheated the system of $6,500.
Oh, my goodness. My jaw dropped. I mean, for what? I didn't do anything wrong. I couldn't understand it.
David had moved since he'd stopped claiming benefits. He later learned the state had mailed a fraud determination notice to his old address, and after it was sent back, the state never looked further. Instead, the penalties and interest began piling up to a total of more than $25,000.
As far as they were concerned, I owed the money, and there's nothing they could do about it. I didn't get any reason for the first place I was suspected of fraud, because they didn't send them to the right address. They had defaulted everything, so it was like I missed that step of saying, oh, I didn't do anything wrong and trying to prove myself. They just defaulted me.
David's wages were being garnished even though his employer and his union backed his claim that he had not committed fraud.
I've never been so upset and felt so wronged against by the government, and they just didn't care. No matter what I did, no matter what person I went to, there was no help anywhere I could go, and it felt like I was in the middle of a lake with no oar.
It took a toll on him.
Sleepless nights, not getting along with the wife. When they finally did start taking the money out, I had to work overtime, 12 hours a day, on top of not getting any sleep. It was a really tough time.
Finally, with the help of a clinic at the University of Michigan Law School, David Vela got a hearing before an administrative law judge to plead his case. No one from the Unemployment Insurance Agency showed up. The judge ruled the state had wrongfully garnished over $4,800 from David's wages. Finally, more than a month later, he got his money back. Now, he and his wife, his voice of reason, are trying to put this ordeal behind them.
You know, thank God I had a voice of reason with me, and we were able to work overtime and cut down and everything. It's not a good thing to do with people, taking food out of their mouth, taking, you know, their every day, you know, going to work and doing what they're supposed to do, their families, you know, and sending kids to school and off to college, and it was really tough.
Steve Gray is the director of the Unemployment Insurance Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School. And Steve, David's story, I guess, what, take that and multiply it by who knows how many?
Yeah, 50,000, 60,000. They're saying 50,000 claimants or so.
Falsely accused of fraud. And
right.
Here this was the state's attempt to automate or streamline or robotize the unemployment system in Michigan. You couple a computer system with a 93% error rate and Michigan's 400% penalty for unemployment insurance fraud. Highest in the country, right?
By far the highest in the country.
So what did we wind up with?
A huge mess, obviously. We just had so many people, like you said, 97% of that 50,000 people. Actually, I think it's closer to 97% were wrong. And so we just had many, many, many innocent people that were accused of fraud. And the fallout for that is not just the embarrassment or the, you know, the anxiety that people feel, but there were people that actually lost their jobs when their current employer got a notice that they were accused of fraud. And they're like, well, we don't want to have anything to do with anybody that's been accused of fraud. They fired them. So there's been significant fallout.
And hearkening back to David's story, that it seems so many people had no idea they were in trouble.
Right.
None. Until suddenly wages started going away.
Right. That's part of the problem, is that the computer went back and looked up to 6 years prior. And so as a result, many people had moved. And so when they sent a notice out saying, we think maybe you've committed fraud, a lot of people didn't get that notice. And so they just went ahead and found fraud. And then the first time that they would ever find out about it would be when they started collecting.
Midas went online in 2013. I'm wondering, in the time since then, how has that changed the number and the types of problems you've handled for people at the clinic?
you know, our caseload has skyrocketed since 2013 and all the fraud started coming through. One of the problems with the way that the current system is set up, there's a provision in the statute that allows people that are denied unemployment benefits to get a state-funded advocate to represent them at a hearing. But if they're accused of fraud, they aren't allowed to get a state-funded advocate. And so as a consequence, people were going unrepresented or they were coming to offices like ours that, you know, we don't charge for our services. And so it's been a huge influx.
So you're accused of unemployment fraud, but you cannot turn to the state's assistance for people charged because it's unemployment fraud. This is like catch-22.
It's a vicious circle.
Steve, let's talk about the lessons learned from all of this and from where you sit, what you think needs to happen, about how the process needs to change here in Michigan, what we can fix now to improve this system.
So we found out that robo-fraud, that you know, the computer making the determinations and not having a real person look at it, was kind of just the tip of the iceberg. You know, we discovered that there were many, many people that when they make a determination after they go off and stop claiming benefits, never get notice. They never find out, you know, that the agency thinks that they weren't eligible or that they've been accused of fraud. And so that, I think, is one area for a big next step is to ensure that people who are accused of fraud are given notice and so that they are allowed to come in and defend themselves. As one of my clients, it's actually David Vella, had said, it's always amazing that they could find me when they wanted to get the money, but they couldn't find me to tell me that there was a problem that I could do something about it. The way that they use these cross matches with wage reports, and they use Department of Treasury, and they use Secretary of State to actually find people to try to get the money from them, they could use those same systems to let them know that they've been accused of fraud.
So it would at least give the person a chance to go, wait a minute here,
right,
and try to keep this from ever happening in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah, and Wanda Stokes has, you know, just made a firm commitment that they're going to do everything in their power to make sure this doesn't happen again. And I think that would be one area. Another area that we sort of discovered as we were looking into this was that 400% penalty, which anybody that's accused of fraud, anybody that's convicted of fraud, has to pay not just the money that they wrongfully received back, but they then multiply that by four. And that is by far the largest penalty of any state in the country. The closest state that we have next to that is 100% penalty. And so many states have 25%, 15% penalty. It's pretty clear that our penalty is just way out of line with what's fair. Many states have penalties that are graduated so that if maybe you get a first fraud determination, you pay a 25% penalty. And then if it happens again, you think, okay, well, maybe, you know, you should have known better. You have to pay a 50% penalty or you know, so you could graduate it. But we need to drop it down. And it definitely sounds like the agency is at least publicly saying that they're open to having the legislature reduce the penalty as well.
Is there a sympathetic ear in the legislature that you're aware of?
I think so. Yeah. The robo-fraud legislation that passed at the end of the year was unanimously supported in both the House and the Senate, and it was signed by the governor. So I think there's support. I think the legislature is aware that there's a problem with the agency. I think the agency is aware that there's a problem, and I think everybody's aware that that 400% penalty is just unconscionable.
Any thought of changing the setup where right now, as you say, with the advocacy program won't help you if you're accused of unemployment fraud, but here it is, the state that's falsely accusing you.
Right.
Is that catch-22 something that could be corrected?
Absolutely, yeah. So that was actually a proposed amendment to the legislation that passed and it didn't make it through to the end. But I think that that's allowing advocates for people that are accused of fraud so that they have representation, so that justice is done. I think another part of the provision would require that if, in fact, you are found guilty of fraud, then you have to pay back the amount of money for the advocate, you know, which I think seems fair. But if you're innocent, then the system has done its work and you wouldn't have to pay it back.
So let's talk a little about what might be changed in the investigative process that you think could be helpful, because here we have people that have no idea that they have been found to commit fraud. So what's missing in the investigative process?
So what was missing was any investigation.
There you go.
I mean, just to put it bluntly. So what was happening was they send out a questionnaire to the claimant that has two questions on it. And as far as I know, that questionnaire has not changed. The first question is, did you commit fraud? Now, I don't know. Maybe they're hoping that somebody's going to admit it if they did. But the second question is, why did you commit fraud?
Oh, boy.
Right? And it gives you a list of, I needed the money. You know, somebody else applied for unemployment for me. You know, I mean, it gives you all these possible, but it never gives you an opportunity to explain, you know, why you were overpaid. It never even tells you in that questionnaire what it is that they say that you did that was wrong. So you don't have any idea what it is, and so you can't adequately respond. And then if you don't respond to that questionnaire within 10 days, that's when MITRE kicked in and was automatically adjudicating people with fraud. What they say they're doing now is they're still flagging them. They're still sending out those questionnaires, which I don't think are worth the paper that they're written on. But then they're also doing a follow-up if they don't get an adequate explanation from the claimant. So they're supposed to make a call to the claimant and potentially to the employer. So that's the new sort of investigative system, which I think is fair. Problem is, if they don't get a hold of them, then they're stuck with that questionnaire. So that questionnaire needs to be fixed. And then if they don't feel like they got an adequate explanation, then they'll charge them with fraud. The question is, well, what is an adequate explanation, right? We don't know that yet. And that's what one of the things I had mentioned earlier that we'd like to find out. So we'd like to get those questionnaires meaningful with some explanation of to what it is they say that you did that was wrong, and then give you an opportunity to explain. And then, you know, figure out what the criteria is that they're using to determine fraud. You know, those are kind of the things that we're looking for down the road.
What do you say to people who hear all of this and think, I don't think if I lost my job, I would ever dare apply for unemployment in the state of Michigan?
Right. There's been a huge, huge chilling effect. And I hear that almost every day from my clients. If I would have known, and that was even for people that haven't been accused of fraud, if I would have known I'm going to have to pay this all back, because they go forward in good faith and they say, I'm eligible for unemployment, here's my information, and then the employer submits their information, and then maybe 2-3 months down the road, the agency makes a decision. Well, after we looked at it all, we decided you weren't eligible. Now you have to pay it all back. And right now, there's a 1% interest that's charged if you are overpaid. I feel like that's an area where we could make a difference as well, because if you're not accused of fraud, then you're innocently receiving money, you know, from the state. The state's saying you're eligible and they're giving you the money. And then if it turns out later that you're not eligible, that 1% interest, which actually when it's compounded, turns out to be 12% interest. So it's
ouch.
It's quite a penalty just in and of itself,
yeah.
You know. But Wanda Stokes says that the agency is committed to cleaning house and to making sure that people that are eligible get their benefits. And so I guess I would encourage people not to let what's happened to the wrongly accused people chill their interest in applying for unemployment, because you desperately need the money. And right now it's just 20 weeks worth of benefits is all you can get. And so, you know, you get, it's just meant to be a stopgap until you go back to work. And there's appeals if you're found not to be eligible, you can file an appeal. Just you go into it with your eyes open and make sure that you let the agency know where the best place is to get a hold of you, because a lot of people go into it and they end up moving or whatever, and the agency doesn't know how to get a hold of them, and that's when some of the trouble starts.
What should we watch for when you talk about, let's see if the agency does the house cleaning and makes these changes? What are we watching for?
I appreciate the fact that they reassigned the director. But that director had not been there very long. And so I'm not sure that she was at the heart of the problem. And we can say, we can blame it on a computer system. Oh, there's these unintended consequences. But a computer system only does what it's programmed to do. So that computer system was programmed to make the decisions that the way it made them. And the computer system was programmed to notify people in the way that they were notified. I would hope that the agency gets to the heart of whoever's idea it was to do robo-fraud in the first place and find them some other opportunities, because they're obviously, you know, paying unemployment benefits is not in their wheelhouse. We don't really know. The agency said we're going to review the remaining 30,000 cases. What exactly does that mean? We don't know that. And so I'd like to hear from the agency, how does this review process work? What exactly are they doing to review cases, and what criteria are they using to decide whether or not somebody was falsely accused or not? And then what are they doing to make people whole? They say that they're going to pay the money back. How much have they collected during that period of time? How much of that money has been paying back? I want to hear from the agency as we go into the coming months, you know, how is this process working? And their initial assessment when they reviewed the first 20,000 cases, they said that they only found about 3% of those that had actually committed fraud. So, you know, you would expect those numbers to hold through the rest of there. So that would mean that, you know, 90%, 7% of that 50,000 are going to get their cases reversed and hopefully have any money that was withheld from them given back.
I hear hopefully.
Yes.
So
I'm keeping, you got to keep your eyes open, you know, because I feel very good about the agency's position that they're taking. Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed like at the end of the year, the logjam kind of broke loose, and the agency, when Wanda Stokes got in there, said, hey, you know, we're not going to dance around this anymore. There was a mistake that was made and innocent people have been hurt.
Just to be clear, is MIDAS still in use or have they stopped using the computer system?
No, MIDAS is still in use. And, you know, I mean, I think to the untrained eye, you know, if you want to blame MIDAS, oh, it's this horrible computer system. Yeah. No, it's just the way that it was programmed, you know, and it can be reprogrammed. You know what I mean? So I don't know that it was a waste of $45 million. It's just when you program a system to presume any claimant that applies for unemployment benefits could commit fraud, that needs to be changed. The programming needs to be changed. So I don't have a problem with them continuing to use MIDAS. I just want them to program it in a way that's consistent and fair.
Steve Gray, Director of the Unemployment Insurance Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School. As always, Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Earlier today, Michigan's Unemployment Insurance Agency reached agreement with the plaintiffs in a federal lawsuit over the computer-determined fraud cases. The UIA promises to continue the reforms it enacted since the tens of thousands of false fraud cases came to light. That includes making all reasonable attempts to contact people who have filed claims and revising its forms to make them more understandable to employers and the people filing the claims. The UIA will also delay collection efforts while someone is appealing a fraud determination. There is still a class action suit before the Michigan Court of Claims over all of this, filed by Royal Oak attorney Jennifer Lord. She tells Stateside Today that the settlement of the federal suit is, in her words, a great first step, but there are large gaps that must be addressed.